Prater's mood sobered considerably during that time. Through the binoculars, he could see no refugees fleeing out over the dry lake bed. No one and nothing moved, except the leaping flames where the refinery had once stood and the steadily uncoiling column of black smoke. They approached the ville at a crawl down the main road that wound around the lakeshore. Thick smoke was still rising from the ville's epicenter. The wind at their backs kept it away from them.
I don't see anything alive. I mean, nothing.
I see bodies on the other side of the gate. Oh, shit. All right, everybody. This is Trader. Everybody pull over here. We're going in on foot.
With Ryan, Hun, and Poet behind him, Trader walked over to the wire part of the barricade. There was a pile of Sekhmen on the ground on the other side. They hadn't been killed by the blast at the refinery. Trader could see that right off. For one thing, the corpses were intact. Their heads, arms, legs were all still connected to torsos, and there were no great bloody wounds from being hit by flying objects. For another thing, and this was the big giveaway, there was green froth caked all over their mouths, chins, and noses. Their faces were black and swollen, tongues sticking out of their gaping jaws like hard salamis. Under their armor vests, their bellies were already starting to bloat.
Oh no. Nerve gas.
Fucking nerve gas.
Shabazz must have had it stored somewhere handy to the refinery.
Poet looked up from the bodies and passed them to the ruined ville. The war captain grimaced and ran the flat of his hand over the top of his head.
Is it safe to go on, JB?
Maybe. Question is, what good can we do if we do go in there?
No. I gotta see.
Trader opened the gate. As he stepped inside, he turned.
Keep the wags out.
Ryan, Hun, Poet, and most of the crew followed their leader around the maze of berms and into Virtue Lake. The shantytown had been blasted flat. Scattered bonfires raged among the heaps of rubbish. Human bodies lay mixed in with the smoking refuse. There was an eerie stillness. Then Trader realized what was missing. It was the steady, grinding noise of the refinery. In the distance, there was no sign of the plant that had once dominated the landscape. As he scanned the fields of trash that had once been human dwellings, he asked himself how many people were half buried out there. Hundreds, surely. Maybe even 1,000. And they were all dead. Men, women, children. To pull them out of the trash and properly bury them would have taken weeks.
Hey, Ryan.
Yeah?
Come over here. I think I found something of yours. See this body on the ground?
Shit. It's my blade.
The handle of the big blade was sticking up out of the chest of a man in pinstriped overalls. The point had been shoved up under his sternum.
That one sure didn't die the gas. See? No green froth.
It looks like that boy Gaido got his revenge in him.
Looks like.
Ryan pried the knife free. He cleaned it on the crew boss's shirt before he slid it back into his leg sheath.
Trader, there might be a kid called Gaido laying around here close. He was a help to us. Like to have a look-see if we've got the time.
We've got time.
Ryan and Poet searched intently without speaking, looking for the boy's corpse in a widening circle around the dead man. They lifted the corners of corrugated metal sheets that had flown off roofs and turned back scorched sheet plastic walls. They found no child's body in the debris. After a few minutes, they gave up. Neither of the warriors speculated aloud that Gaido might have somehow escaped the disaster. Under the circumstances, it seemed like too much of a long shot. As Trader led them closer to the blast's ground zero, the body started showing signs of death by explosion. Violent, instantaneous death. Trader felt an odd kind of relief at the sight of people with large pieces of metal driven through their torsos, with heads missing. He knew firsthand what it was like to taste the nerve gas, to feel it at work in his body. He knew getting your head blown off was a mercy. When they came to the warehouse where the looted cargo had been stored, it was obvious that nothing salvageable was left. The roof and walls were gone. The expanding fireball had melted the rest into a vast, still-smoking gob. A few blocks farther on was the refinery site. It was as if the plant had never existed. In its place was a crater several hundred yards across. And from the center of the crater, plumes of fire still jetted skyward. At the bottom of the pit, partially visible as the flames licked and danced, there was some metal debris, including an intact, heavy steel torture tank.
What the hell is that sound coming from that thing?
I don't know. Probably steam.
Trader just stared at the flames.
This wasn't your fault, Trader. It was Shabazz's. If he hadn't stored his infernal gas grins here, his people would all still be alive.
Such a waste. Such a goddamned waste. But it'll stand as a lesson for anyone who ever plots to stand against me.
With popular myths and legends, there were always variations, even discrepancies in the basic facts. A tale was told a certain way in one locality, another way someplace else. The story of Traitor and Virtue Lake had its different twists too, depending on who was doing the telling and what part of Deathlands the teller was from. The folks down in the southern baronies claimed that the awful sounds that the first witness, Bob or Tom or Jim, heard down at the bottom of the flaming pit were the screams of Baron Zeal's ghost as his soul fried in hell. Up near the Shens, it was said that the terrible noises weren't made by a ghost, but by a living man. They said that the big explosion drove the nerve gas away from the center of the refinery, and the rising heat and smoke from the fuel fires kept it out. They speculate that if a man could have made it safely into a heavy-walled stainless steel tank, and by a miracle have lived through the shock of initial blast, he and the tank could have ended up at the bottom of the crater, where jets of leaking fuel burned hot and heavy. And what with the other debris down there in the pit, of course the tank door could easily have become wedged shut. How long could a man survive trapped in a torture cell like that, hopping around like a cricket on a hot skillet? A day? 3 days? A week? 3 weeks? What would his face look like at the moment of his death? These were the questions Shen people loved to debate around their campfires. One thing was certain, though. Trader never put in his own 2 cents worth to straighten out the facts, maybe because he figured it was impossible given the way things traveled Deathlands by word of mouth, maybe because the way the story came out served his needs. After the tale spread far and wide through Deathlands, crooked barons and murdering road pirates always thought long and hard before they messed with the likes of Trader. Deathlands Encounter is a graphic audio production. Deathlands and all characters are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 1999, Worldwide Library. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Johan Detweiler, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, David Coyne, Eric Messner, Dolores King-Williams, Andy Clements, Tim Carlin, Sherry Simpson, Karen Carbone, Christopher Graybill, James Lewis, and James Konacek. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Nathaniel Perry. Graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry and Temeskin Wubna. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Nathaniel Perry and Dan Smith. Book adapted for graphic audio by Dan Smith. If you enjoyed Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for another episode of Mark Dalton, Owner-Operator.